our guest this morning, and also our honoree on today's Women's History Month feature. Amazing how that happens, completely by accident, I'm sure, is Beth Bartlett. And she's the author of a book called Making Waves, Grassroots Feminism in Duluth and Superior. Beth, good morning. It's so good to have you in the studio again.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Thanks so much. This was a fascinating read. It started out, the first thing I thought when I started to read the introductory chapters was I thought about the movie North Country. Mm-hmm. And I had to look it up. The movie came out in 2005, and I had to go and look it up to get a sense of the timeline. But the lady that the book and the movie are based on,
Lois Jensen.
Lois Jensen went to work at EVTAC in 1975. Mm-hmm. She filed her lawsuit in 1984. And it wasn't settled until 14 years later. So, Of course, they had to condense everything. And I said to you when you came in, I said, well, that's something, too. I hadn't connected that with this, with the idea of women standing up and women organizing. And I said, that would have been so scary. And you said the movie Hollywoodized it. And so I thought, oh, they really sugarcoated it. And you said it was so much worse.
Yes.
And that's surprising because I thought, whoa, that's bad enough. I mean, what I saw in the movie was kind of terrifying. So that was another example of women in this part of the world standing up and saying, enough of this. When I talk to a lot of friends who are from this area, though, they've got grandmas that sort of paved the way. I mean, grandmas that did, in many ways, very traditional things. But by the same token, they had a lot of very untraditional attitudes about women and the importance of women. Was that something kind of unique to the immigrants that settled this particular part of the state?
I don't know if it was unique, but it was certainly an important part of the immigrants who settled this part of the state, particularly the Finnish women that came over in the early 1900s. They already had the vote in Finland, and so they were rather appalled that they didn't have the vote here in the United States. And so the National Women's Suffrage Association enlisted them in their efforts to secure the vote for the women in the United States. But they were, many of them came as single women. That's unusual. Were very much a part of the Finnish socialist movement here. We're very active in organizing. They had their own women's newspaper, which was a national newspaper based here in the Twin Ports. And basically, it was one of the very first feminist newspapers in the country that was here.
Because I don't remember hearing a lot of stories about my Scandinavian, you know, my Swedish and Norwegian grandmothers. Mm-hmm. They did the work of, you know, 10 men right alongside their husbands. Right. But they, you know, I don't remember any stories about them being active in, you know, the movement to get out the vote or anything like that.
Right.
There are some factors that you mentioned in or that are mentioned in the book that contributed to feminism really taking hold here, including a small town community. You cite the influence of the Anishinaabe, the proximity to Lake Superior and the northern wilderness. I was curious how you felt that contributed perhaps to the movement that, or the energy perhaps is a better way of saying it, that was taking hold here in our area.
Well, in terms of the Anishinaabe, in the longer arc of history, before contact, before colonization, the traditions of Anishinaabe are very women honoring, women centered, women had an equal voice, if not a greater voice, than men. Women were honored. Violence against women was shunned. And that tradition, I think, is deep in this land and this culture and is very much a part of what Anishinaabe women and their work in feminist organizations in this area were and still are reclaiming and restoring. So that's a huge part of that. In terms of the lake and the wilderness, partly I think it draws certain kinds of people and inspire people who are creative and passionate and willing to get out there. But it also, I think, serves as a restorative. Just to give you a brief example from contemporary times, the day after the election, when so many of us in the feminist community were devastated, I got together with some of my students, and that's where we went. We just went to the lake, and it helped. It helped just to restore our spirits so we could go on. And when you're facing intense opposition and resistance and negativity, it is important to have those restoring influences. And so I think that's an important part. I also came across a really interesting piece, which is something I've always believed but has now been scientifically proven, that the experience of awe increases people's capacity to cooperate, to collaborate, to work together to a greater good. And I have that experience of awe every day looking out at that lake. And it is the Gitche Manitou. It is the Great Spirit, and it does inspire people, I think.
I was interested, fascinated by just a sentence that stuck with me, because it seemed to really, in just a few words, isolate something that I think is so important, and not to man bash, but to take a look at different ways that cultures, because I think that it's men and women that can feel this way. When you talked about in Native traditions, how the idea of respect, mm-hmm. how Native men were familiar with the concept of respect, but it was, the idea was you would respect a deer, for example, and you would, mm-hmm. Before you killed it, mm-hmm. and you would appreciate its contribution to life. And for white men in our society, the idea of respect has to do with toughness and dominance and yes. force. And I think that's a key, that might be a key to changing people's thinking, whether it's women or men, mm-hmm. about what respect is in terms of respecting women or respecting anyone.
Yeah, it was Rebecca St. George who talked about that in her work with batterers at Mending the Sacred Hoop, and certainly the whole, a very, very different notion of respect, of and needing to transform that from about being about power to being about inherent dignity and value.
I can't let you go without acknowledging, as I have a couple of times already, that there's a nice big fat section in the book about the formation of Wise Women Radio yes. in 1981 here at KUMD when it was WDTH. I worked with Stephanie Hempel for a number of years. She was Jean Johnson at the
yes,
time.
She was.
A lot of people in this book changed their first and last names, which is, I mean, you're certainly welcome to do that, but I just find it makes it difficult to keep track of them.
It is.
But that's all right. I mean, it's all about reinvention sometimes. Right. And Wise Women Radio's incarnation continues today
yes,
as the women's
does.
Music program mm-hmm. here on KUMD.
It's amazing that it's still going. I love that it's still going.
I always kind of smile because I have been one of those people that had said in the past, why do we need women radio? We got women on the air. We've got women on the air as announcers, of course, here at KUMD. And uh-huh. you hear women on the radio now all the time. But apparently that wasn't the case.
That wasn't the case.
Earlier.
No, and nor was women's music played on the radio.
When I started in yeah. radio in 78, there were a lot of women. The country crossover thing was mm-hmm. just getting started. Mm-hmm. And I worked at a country station, and I was playing a lot of Dolly Parton and Emmy Lou Harris and Dottie West. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of women, but I guess I hadn't been aware of that there had been such a dearth previously. So I had a lot yeah. of learning to do.
Well, there was also a whole genre basically under the label of women's music that was not being played at all. This certainly became a venue for artists like Chris Williamson and Margie Adam and Alex Dobkin and Holly Near. And, I mean, just many, many women artists who were basically writing feminist and lesbian music. And that didn't have an airing on the radio, certainly not on pop radio in any way. And this was a place that happened, as well as helping to bring the performers here. They were exciting concerts in Duluth at that time.
Well, and how wonderful to give. I think that's what KUMD, of course, has tried to do all along, is to give a voice to those who feel they are not heard. And, of course, we struggle to come up with new and better ways to do that all the time. But you still listen to women's music on KUMD?
I do, yeah.
How has it changed?
You
know, because we've got some longtime volunteers.
Right.
We've got a lot of longtime volunteers, but we've also got some folks that have been around for quite a while. So how's your sense of how it's changed as you listen now?
I think it's become sometimes more mainstream, but also I think there's more rock. This is what I'm noticing. There's simply a lot more rock music. And in the 80s, it would be more what I would consider folk or blues.
Beth, thank you so much for coming in. This is a fascinating book. The one last thing I did want to mention as I keep one last thingy. One of the things that I noticed as I was reading was so many, many, many familiar names. Mm-hmm. And so many of these people are right here in our community, and we still have access to them, to their stories, to their wisdom, to their knowledge. Does it surprise you that they stayed here in this community? Or did you kind of expect, I bet all these people have gone off to seek bigger or greener pastures?
This is the greenest pasture. Why would you want to go? I can't imagine leaving this community. It's a wonderful community. It doesn't surprise me that people stay.
Beth, thanks again for coming in. It was great to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
Beth Bartlett, our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads. She's the author of a fascinating new book called Making Waves, Grassroots Feminism in Duluth and Superior. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.